Hello, it's Saturday. Let's pretend that it's Thursday, okay? I'm not going to get into all that here. I'm sure I will leave a disclaimer on Instagram. But today we're going to talk about Rosa J. Carmichael. Going into this, I really thought this episode was going to be a lot more spooky and true crime focused. Turns out, you can't really find much about Rosa on the interwebs. So we're going to have a bit of a history lesson today, but I still found it pretty interesting. I'm not a big American history person. And by that, I mean, like, I was never super duper interested in that growing up. The older I get, the more that I am. But this was still, I found it a little fascinating. So if this isn't really your jam, I'm sorry. We will get to a little bit of spooky and the crimes that Rosa committed. There's also kind of a reason, a theory, a conspiracy, if you will, as to why there isn't much known about Rosa. So if you stick around, I'll tell you why. That's how I'm gonna hook you in. So let's just get started, shall we? Located at 777. Why did I just say located like that? I gotta go about, let's add a flag to edit that out. Okay. Located at 777 Baltimore Street in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, stands a brick building used during the 1863 battle at Gettysburg by commanding Major General Oliver Otis Howard of the 11th Army Corps. Now, as many of you may know, this was the deadliest battle of the American Civil War, excuse my cat, taking place from July 1st through July 3rd of 1863, and this battle resulted in about 51,000 casualties. And this happened all in a town of approximately 2,400 residents, so there's a lot going on in this little area. The structure was located at the north foot of Cemetery Hill, which was the main site of the battle. Now, of these approximately 51,000 soldiers who lost their lives during the battle was Amos, I've heard it pronounced Humiston and also Humiston. I'm going to go with Humiston because I've heard that the most during videos that I watched. If that's incorrect, because someone here is a history buff and they know, please feel free to correct me. On April 26, 1830, Amos was born in Owego, New York. I know how to pronounce that because I recently did a TikTok story on Michelle Harris. If you are interested, look that up because very suspicious, wild story. By the time that he was 30, he was living in Portville, New York, where he had opened his own harness making shop, and he had married his sister-in-law's cousin, Felinda Betsy Ensworth Smith. She was just 23 years old at the time of their marriage and was already widowed. She had married Justin H. Smith on April 15, 1850. However, their marriage lasted less than 9 months because of her husband's death from unknown causes on January 10th of 1851. And with Felinda, Amos shared three small children, Frank, Alice, and Frederick. And on July 26, 1862, he enlisted as a private in the 154th New York Infantry Regiment, Company C. But not before asking his minister, Reverend Isaac Ogden, to look after his wife and children, which Ogden promised to do. Within the year of his enlistment, he was promoted to sergeant, and on July 1st, 1863, while making his way back to his post at Cemetery Hill, he was shot and killed by a Confederate sniper. Shortly after the battle concluded, the daughter of an area tavern keeper found the body of Amos. One report I read indicated that it was a man named Peter Beitler, it's B-E-I-T-L-E-R, and he is cited as the tavern keeper's son-in-law, but other videos that I watched from historians and people giving tours of this area said that the tavern keeper's daughter was only 14 at this time, not to say she couldn't have been married at that time, this was the 19th century, but I found conflicting reports, so most widely, it is reported that the daughter found the body of Amos. But whoever found Amos found him slumped over and clutching an ambrotype photo of his three children. An ambrotype is an early form of photography. It was introduced in the 1850s, and it was created by placing a glass negative against a dark background. I didn't know this. So I kind of fell down a hole about this whole area of photography. It's interesting. I would recommend looking it up. Quick note, though, that Amos had written a letter on May 9th, 1863 to Philinda, and in it he explained how a spent bullet bounced off of his ribs above his heart just a week before that letter. And he tells her that it made him think of home. Like, okay, that sounds pretty serious, but in the letter he mostly expressed how pleased he was to receive the ambrotype of his children. Like, Philinda, I almost died because this spent bullet hit me, but I'm so happy that I got this photo of my children. To me, that was so heart-wrenching, knowing what was going to come in just 2 months. So the photo is brought to the tavern in nearby Grafenberg, which is about 13 miles west of Gettysburg, and it quickly becomes a local attraction along with many other items from the battle. A Philadelphia volunteer physician named John Francis Borns was traveling with four other men, and they were en route to assist the post-battle wounded when their wagon broke down near Grafenberg. Upon visiting the tavern and seeing the image of the children, he knew that somewhere a family was missing their father, and he was determined to locate the family, so he talks to the tavern keeper, whose name is Benjamin Shriver. Now again, Benjamin is either the father of the girl who found Amos, and I've only found a couple of sources that named her, which was Jane, or the father-in-law, perhaps, of Peter, the granite cutter, who may have also found Amos. Maybe they found him all together. There's a lot of conflicting stories. That's neither here nor there. So, Dr. Borns talks Benjamin into letting him take the photo, and he goes back to Philadelphia and he has several hundred inexpensive copies made, because at that time newspapers could not reproduce photos, and he has the story spread with a detailed description of the children in the newspapers, including his address and the way to locate this family. So by the end of October 1863, a paper runs the column in Portville, and by November, a letter arrives to Dr. Borns at his residence from the Portville postmaster on behalf of Philinda Humiston. He sends one of the photograph copies to her, and this is how she confirms that her husband has been killed in battle. What does this have to do with Rosa J. Carmichael? We're getting there, I promise. So the widespread story of the man who died clutching the picture of his children sparked a response about other orphans of the war, and out of that was born an idea to found an asylum for the soldiers' orphans. The war continued on, and nothing really came to pass about the orphanage, but shortly after, the National Orphans Association held a fundraiser, resulting in generous donations from Sunday schools and individual donors. They actually purchased and renovated the brick building on Cemetery Hill, and in October of 1866, around 30 soldiers' orphans arrived. Now, this group included the Humiston children along with their mother, and she became part of the staff. She actually headed up the children's wardrobe department and eventually became headmistress. Things were seemingly well for several years. No negative reports that I could find during this time when Philinda was in charge of things. In fact, in 1867, Ulysses S. Grant was photographed with the children at the entrance of the home, and a Star and Sentinel article read. Now, I'm going to read this, and I apologize in advance because this was printed in 1867. It's a little hard to see, but it reads, "A desirable picture." And an interesting scene transpired on Friday morning at the orphans' homestead. General Grant and His Excellency Governor Geary, it's G-E-A-R-Y, could be Geary, I believe it's Geary. Again, I'm not a history buff, I'm sorry. On setting out with their escort to make the tour of the battlefield, halted at the door of the institution to be photographed in company with the fatherless little ones there sheltered. The generals dismounted, and General Geary, leaving the grouping, kindly assisted in arranging the children. General Grant and the governor, with Generals Horace Porter and S.W. Crawford, formed the center of the grouping, and on either side stood the boys and girls. All remained standing until two negatives were taken. The picture will be a very interesting one. Among the orphans included in it are children from Illinois, Michigan, Maryland, New York, and our own state. Pennsylvania is what they mean. The photograph is to be copyrighted and sold exclusively for the benefit of the soldiers' orphans at the homestead. Copies will be ready within a few days at Mr. Tyson's gallery in this place. In 1869, Felinda was remarried to her third husband, and around this time, Rosa J. Carmichael is brought in as a new teacher and disciplinarian. Dr. Bournes wrote about Rosa, quote, "As a teacher and disciplinarian, Mrs. Carmichael has few equals, and she is a most assiduous and faithful worker, laboring often beyond her strength in school and out." Couldn't be further from the truth in a positive way. In 1871, Felinda and her new husband and Alice and Fred relocated to Beckett, Massachusetts. Frank stayed behind to attend college. And according to a June 1994 article in the Standard Speaker newspaper out of Hazleton, Pennsylvania, rumors of abuse of the children spread throughout the community. A boy of about 16 was found wandering through the town, dirty and disheveled, wearing no shoes, and missing part of his left arm. There really wasn't much else elaborated on that. I'm very curious as to what happened to his arm, if something happened before he was at the orphanage, or if that was a result. Very possible it could be a result. And he claims to be from the orphan's home. He states that Lizzie Hutchinson and Bella Hunter, both aged 17, were put in boys' clothes for nearly 2 months as punishment for ripping their dresses. Now, these girls were doing a lot of manual labor, so I would imagine that if you're doing that kind of work in a dress, it's going to get ripped. So they were punished for doing what they were assigned to do, is what it seems like to me. Bella was actually assigned the more degrading tasks, and then once completed, she would be locked in her room. I wasn't able to really find out more about Lizzie, and you know, maybe Rosa favored her, but it's just reported that Bella kind of got the worst end of it. Now, the townspeople also noticed that many of the children were wearing tattered clothing and losing weight. And there's a widely reported story about a boy who came to visit a friend at the orphanage, but Rosa explained that the boy had just died very suddenly. And the boy returned home to his father, and the father was like, hey, local doctors, how did my boy's friend die under this woman's care? And it was confirmed that no doctor had ever been called to the homestead to treat the boy. Rosa just explained this away as a doctor passing through had left town the night before the boy's death. Later, a skeleton of a young boy was found buried beneath the orphanage. This would not be the only child to die in the home under Rosa's watch. In fact, she reportedly murdered several children. Now, Rosa was arrested and charged with cruelty and held on $300. She was indicted on 3 counts of aggravated assault and battery, and guess what her sentence was? $20 and some court costs. Now, I understand that this was the 19th century, so $20 was probably a hefty fine, but she was asked to leave. Like, hey, Rosa, would you mind just skipping town because you're a horrible abuser of children? We're not going to make you. We're just going to kindly request you to split. So guess what? Rosa's pissed, and she says that the charges were slanderous, and she just goes right on back to the orphanage where her abuse, shocker, ramps up. And more stories begin to emerge. Children were being placed into barrels of water, so like their arms would have to hang out the side so that they didn't drown. Or they were shackled and left chained to a wall in an area known as the orphan's pit. This was a 5 by 8 foot dungeon in the cellar of the homestead. A girl was also said to have been ordered to stand on a desk holding the same position for such an extended period of time that she was so exhausted she couldn't move, and she had to physically be removed and like lifted down because she couldn't walk. Older kids worked as little devil minions for Rosa called stick boys, and these were boys anywhere from 14 to 19 years old, and they were said to have beaten the children with sticks and kicked them while Rosa stood by watching, approving and delighted by all accounts. They would also assist with putting the children in the barrels of water. A little boy around 4 to 5 years old was locked overnight in an outhouse. First of all, my own trigger warning. I don't like confined spaces like that. Like if I go to a porta potty, it's not good. So this one really, 4 to 5 years old, locked in an outhouse. But not only that, it was the dead ass winter. Okay. Freezing. Have you ever been in a Pennsylvania winter? I have. So two men that were passing by around midnight heard his little screams and they were able to help him get out. And it was also noticed throughout town that the soldiers' children were no longer permitted to participate in the Memorial Day parade. I think at this time it was called Decoration Day. I believe that changed around 1867. So it may have been Memorial Day by the time that Rosa came. Either way, the kids weren't allowed to participate. So they would watch these other children go marching by in the parade on their way to decorate the graves of the soldiers' children in the home. Like, this woman, that part, I mean, like, all of it is really terrible, but that made me so sad to think that these kids are just watching these other kids go decorate the graves of their father. I mean, that's the moment that their lives change, and they were sent to this orphanage anyway, which is traumatic enough, and then you come and you're abused by this horrible woman, and then you can't even get out to go, you know, remember your father. Ugh. Anyway, why were they punished so cruelly and brutally? Because they were talking at dinner, usually, reports, you know, nothing major, just being children. Or maybe they snuck an extra piece of bread because she was starving them. So we've learned all that really is like the main, if you look up Rosa Carmichael, these are pretty much all of the same reports that you're going to see. I do want to try to dig a little bit deeper. Like I said, I can only find news articles from this time telling these stories. There's not much else. So I have to tell you now that a lot of people online say that Rosa never even existed and that this is all just a ploy for money-making ghost tours. Now, with this being said, the news articles are real. You can find news articles that refer to her and these claims, but I haven't been able to locate any birth or death records for Rosa, like, at all. I can't find anything. I'm not an expert at this, so I'm not saying that they don't exist. I'm just saying I've spent a lot of time looking for them and I've come up empty-handed. Also, one of the only photos that seems to exist of Rosa is actually Rosa Ann Kennard Carmichael, and she wasn't born until 1865. So, there is a little bit of leverage here to these claims. But Dr. Bourne's was real. And like I said, the newspaper articles were real. So I don't know. It's something to ponder. And speaking of Bourne's, in 1877, he was charged with embezzlement, which included mismanagement, waste of property, and violation of trust. So coupled with the continuing abuse claims of the head matron and Dr. Bourne's new charges, in January of 1878, the homestead was seized by the sheriff and all the contents were auctioned off. It is reported during this time that Rosa left Gettysburg and was never to be seen or heard from again. And as I have said, can't find anything else about her. So is it because she just skipped town because the townspeople were sick of her bullshit? Because you'll read about that. They reportedly chased her out of town. Or is it because she did not exist? I don't know. A mystery that I hope that one day we can solve. Now, according to one of Amos's great-grandchildren, David Humiston Kelly, quick note, by the way, he's like the coolest dude ever. He is partly responsible for deciphering the Mayan hieroglyphs, and he also wrote a book on astronomical techniques of ancient civilizations. I love me some ancient Egypt, okay? Name an ancient Egyptian documentary, and I've seen it at least twice, okay? So this guy was, like, real cool to me. Anyway, he has correspondence from Alice Humiston stating that Bornes would not return the original ambrotype to the children. He told them that they would get it upon his death, but apparently that didn't happen either. Like, buddy, you made mad money off the mass production and sale of this photo, which was a direct link to the abuse and torture of these children and an institution that you brought to life. Like, this was his whole plan was to reunite, locate the family of this unknown soldier and give them closure. And then out of that was, you know, the goodness of his heart. He wanted to start this orphanage, and it seemed to be motivated by goodness and kindness, but he made lots of money off the sale of these. And, while you're reading it, there are several accounts that he didn't do anything after he made this money. Like, he was just living the high life after making all this money off of this photo that was not his. He convinced a tavern keeper to let him take it. This wasn't his photo. So how can you tell the children of the man that you have profited from? Yeah, I'll give you this picture of you. This is a picture of you. And I'm going to hold on to it until I die. And then when I die, you can have it back. Also important to note is that Bourne spent summers at the orphanage, so I personally find it very difficult to believe that he did not know what was going on, if these abuse claims are legitimate, which I feel that they are. I think she existed. I think all of this happened, but he had to know. Like, he was being essentially catered to by tiny little servants. So, you know what, Bornes? You kind of suck too. So when the orphanage was shut down, the buildings were sold, and in 1903, they were converted to residential duplexes. The schoolhouse was torn down, and the girls' dormitory was moved down the street. In 1915, it became a bed and breakfast and was kept within the same family for a century. In 2013, it was purchased by new owners with the intent to be converted into a diorama. Now, as you can imagine, this is a hot spot for ghost hunting. There have been hundreds upon hundreds of reports of being touched, people hearing the children. Many paranormal investigators have gone here. If you Google this orphanage, you can just type in haunted orphanage Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, and click on videos, and a lot will come up, and they're actually pretty interesting to watch. Like, some people have caught some things that make me go, my stance on paranormal activity is I'm not fully committed, but I'm not opposed either. Like, I'm pretty open. I know that I've had certain experiences that I cannot explain away by science. So, like, I watch ghost shows and stuff, and I think my mood just determines my level of belief that day or how scared I want to be. That doesn't matter here. So, a couple more well-known network shows about ghost hunting. Ghost Adventures in 2010 actually aired an episode of their investigations of the orphanage, as well as Ghost Hunters in 2014. The orphanage actually made the cut for the show Most Terrifying Places in 2019. Now, many people who visit the orphanage will leave toys geared toward the 1800s, such as balls, dolls, etc., for the children to play with. And in the pit, a shackle remains chained to the wall. At the nearby Jenny Wade house, there is a lot of activity reported from these ghost children. Jenny Wade, if you're not familiar, was the only civilian to be killed in the Gettysburg Battle. She was a 20-year-old seamstress, and her name was Mary Virginia Wade, but she went by Jenny. She had actually come to stay at the house to help take care of her sister's newborn baby, and she was reportedly baking bread for the soldiers when a stray bullet struck her from the back through her shoulder, and it pierced her heart, killing her. Now, many believe that the bullet was fired from inside the Farnsworth House Inn, and Jenny was finally buried in the Evergreen Cemetery after being moved from the cellar of the house and then temporarily buried in the front yard. She does have a monument that marks her grave, as well as an American flag that flies day and night. Now, the only other woman to hold that same honor is Betsy Ross. And some historians say that the children used to hide in the Jenny Wade house to get away from Rosa, and this is why there's so many reports of seeing ghost children at the home. On the episode of Ghost Hunters, a black mass is captured in the Wade house, as well as a thermal image of a human figure walking around the grounds. It kind of like floats off and disappears like into this bush. It's kind of interesting. I would recommend checking it out. But that is the story of what I thought was going to be Rosa J. Carmichael, but really it kind of just morphed into this background story about Amos and just sadness. The whole thing is just sad. So because I thought this was going to be a lot longer, I didn't realize that there is minimal information out there about Rosa. I was trying to find books and everything, and most of the books you can actually preview because they're just ebooks. And there's not much information that's different than what's out there in online articles. I'm going to do another episode, 2 in 1 week. And I know that you're rolling your eyes. Like, you said this was going to be out on Thursday. But like I said, I had some things I'll probably disclaim on Instagram. So I will do another small episode to kind of make up for the fraudulent Rosa Carmichael episode. But if you enjoyed it, you know what to do. You know where to find me on Instagram at A Pine for True Crime. You can email me at apinepodcast@gmail.com. And of course, if you want to hang out with me on TikTok, it is at Dusty Vibes, and Dusty is with an I. So thank you so much, as always, for your patience, and I'll talk to you soon.